Welcome to the Project Censored Show. I'm your host, Mickey Huff, in studio with Chase Palmieri. On today's program, we continue our discussion with ongoing social media censorship on big tech platforms, particularly those like Facebook and Twitter. But on today's show, we'll focus on alternatives for journalists and activists, as well as others. We are joined once again by the activist and journalist Eleanor Goldfield of ACT OUT, and we'll also be joined by Bill Ottman, who is CEO and founder of a new platform called Minds.com. Stay with us.
About criminal minds, political ties, habitualized alibis, skies, another guise of democracy, politics, and the apocalypse. Got the skies like an ominous.
Welcome to the Project Censored Show. I'm your host, Mickey Huff, in studio with Chase Palmieri. On the first segment of today's program, we are joined once again on the Project Censored Show by Eleanor Goldfield. Eleanor is a creative activist, journalist, and poet. She is the founder and host of the show ACT OUT, which airs on Free Speech TV, Dish Network, DirecTV, Roku, Amazon Fire, and others. Her articles and her program cover people and topics which corporate media either censor or misrepresent. So that's certainly a great overlap with what we do here at the Project Censored Show. So Eleanor Goldfield, welcome back to the Project Censored Show.
Thank you so much for having me. So as many people will already know, Facebook purged some 800 pages, including the anti-media and Copwatch and a lot of progressive and radical organizations, outlets. Inauthentic behavior is what they claimed they were guilty of. And of course, that's hilarious because what they're actually guilty of is the authentic behavior of reporting the news, calling out brutal cops, and dissenting from the status quo. And Edward Snowden himself said that Facebook is a surveillance network with the guise of a social media platform. And so the issue of Facebook not only doing that extreme surveillance that Snowden talked about, but on top of that, this purging has pushed people to really look for an alternative. I wrote an op-ed about this, and I outlined how over the past years, even before the Russiagate issues in 2016, people were already noticing that their posts were getting flagged or taken down, or they weren't able to, for example, boost something. Or people weren't getting their posts, so they were following that page. So people were already experiencing that and made it that much worse when Facebook decided to join up with people like the Atlantic Council and search for quote-unquote fake news, which, of course, is just another way of saying anything that goes against the state status quo. And even individual activists, particularly activists dealing with human rights issues that pertain to Black and brown communities, they have been noticing an extreme amount of censorship and surveillance taking place on Facebook as well. So all of this coming together really has pushed radical and progressive journalists and activists to look for an alternative, which is what we've been doing, and feel like we've found a pretty good home.
This show, as you know, is all about what the alternatives might be to a Facebook or Twitter. As you know, we'll be talking to Bill Ottman, the founder and CEO of Minds.com, later. And you've been helping Bill in promoting this hashtag Minds Shift, kind of a move from Facebook and Twitter to Minds.com. And we'll get into the reasons why that is the better home, possibly. But before we do that, can you fill us in on if you think Facebook is the worst actor in the social media space, or how some of these top platforms like Facebook, Twitter, and YouTube compare as far as censorship?
From what I've seen, Facebook is the worst. I remember, when Alex Jones was stripped from Twitter and Facebook and YouTube, there were a lot of people on the left that started celebrating. And meanwhile, there were some of us that were not going to the parties because we knew exactly where this was going. And I got yelled at for being pro-Alex Jones, and I'm not. But the idea that the censorship would stop with Alex Jones is laughable, but it gets people up to accept a certain level of censorship because they're like, oh, well, look, Alex Jones is gone, so these other pages must have been really horrific as well.
Right.
And, of course, that's not true, but it makes a good case for the state to continue working with companies like Facebook and Twitter to continue this censorship and crackdown.
when we had you and some others on, we weren't arguing that Alex Jones's content is in any way reliable. What we were arguing for was the precedent that this would set, and basically an argument for free speech principles in what has become our new digital town squares. And just to touch back in on that episode, because we haven't really revisited it since then, we said there were 800 pages purged from Facebook at the time. Do you know if any of those pages have been reinstated?
I can't speak to all of them, but I know that the people that I'm familiar with have not been reinstated, and there's been no indication that any of their questions have been answered, such as, could you point to this inauthentic behavior? Could you be more specific? That has gone completely unanswered.
The Project Censored show goes back to 2010, but of course, as an organization, we go back to the 70s. And, you know, we remember the rise of Alex Jones. We remember when Alex Jones actually did some quasi-journalistic pieces on the Patriot Act and crackdown on civil liberties and dissent. But he was always interested in taking it the extra mile into speculation and really sensationalist tripe in a lot of ways. And I think that he's gotten definitely more and more that way. His own attorney argued he was a performance artist and that he was not a journalist. I'd like to remind listeners, you're tuned to the Project Censored Show. I'm Mickey Huff with Chase Palmieri. We are speaking with artist, activist, and independent journalist Eleanor Goldfield. And after this musical break, we'll continue our conversation. Please stay with us. On this segment today, we are rejoined by Eleanor Goldfield, activist, artist, journalist. Her program Act Out is fantastic. We hope that you tune into it. Eleanor Goldfield, very quickly before we jump back into our conversation, can you tell people where to find you online?
Absolutely. You can find me at artkillingapathy.com. That's my website.
Okay. And of course, you're involved in several other things, including a Common Censored podcast, which is certainly up our alley here at the project, something that we're obviously interested in doing. The more the merrier, the more people that are calling out these problems and advocating for critical media literacy education, that's what we need. We need more people that understand that that is one of the root solutions to these challenges. So, Eleanor, given that we've been hashing out some of the problems with Facebook, Twitter, etc., and of course, over at Mint Press News, Manar Mahawish, she has been writing and talking about this quite a bit and fighting the real fake news. And of course, we've gotten on this program into the NATO-funded think tanks like the Atlantic Council that Facebook has hired on, or the right-wing Weekly Standard. I mean, again, this is definitely a ruse under the guise of fighting fake news. It's pretty much labeling things that are dissenting or are critical of the established order as fake and trying to steer people's attention away from it. But let's talk a little bit more now about the positive and about the things that you're already doing. Certainly Chase is involved in a fantastic project that's relaunching. We're still going at it here at Project Censored. So you have been introducing us not long ago to Minds.com. And as Chase said earlier, we're going to be speaking with Bill Ottman here later on in the program. But I wanted you just to share with our listeners not just what drove you, like migration-wise, off of some, and you're not technically off of some of these other social media platforms, but what was attractive to you about this? And again, it might not be Minds.com per se, but something else, but share with our listeners some ideas about what you think was positive about that and what drew you to it.
It's open source, decentralized, and one of the reasons that I felt that this would be good because of all the things that have been happening at Facebook, and it seems like a really good time to start building somewhere else, particularly because Bill, who you're going to be speaking to in a minute, has been really responsive and open to this idea and trying to get Mind to be a good home for radical journalists. And just to make it clear, I'm not getting paid by Mind. It's not a paid ad or anything. I'm a terrible capitalist. I hardly get paid by anybody. I'm doing this because I feel like it's important to highlight new platforms that don't work with the state in order to crush dissent and in order to surveil you. So Mind is that platform right now. There are others, sure, but another reason that Mind is good is because it already has a pretty wide usership. And because, again, they're really, Bill and the folks at Mind seem really open to suggestions on how to make a better user experience, how to work with content, and how to promote the work of independent journalists that aren't the mainstream. Those are the reasons that I felt it was a good idea to shift to Mind. And this is not about deleting your Facebook account. I think if you want to, that's great. But this isn't like an ultimatum, like, in order to do this shift, you have to delete every other account. You know, I totally get why people want to stay on Facebook. It's been deemed too big to fail. A quarter of the world's population has a Facebook account. I mean, I get it if you want to see your friends' kids grow up or what they eat for dinner or whatever. That's totally fine, but understand what happens, what goes with that. Not only are you not getting actual news, but you're also being surveilled.
So, Eleanor, can you give us a little bit more background on this hashtag Minds Shift? First, when is the shift itself going to be taking place? Who are some of the big journalists or maybe even outlets that are going to be taking part in this shift? And who is already on Minds.com that we might know?
The shift, we're hoping that it will take place by the 1st of January. So kind of like taking advantage of that new slate idea. You can go to Minds.com right now. It's very similar to getting a Facebook account. And you'll notice some differences, like there's a crypto aspect. There's definitely some differences, but I didn't find the learning curve deep. But I'm also asking people, like, if you have questions or anything, you're more than welcome to reach out to me on my channel, which is Minds.com/act out. And we have a Mindshift group that you can join on Mind as well, where you can connect with other viewers and readers and creators of radical media. And some of the people that are already on Mind that are part of this are the Anti-Media, which was one of the pages that was purged. They already have a pretty good following on Mind. Rachel Blevins is another one of the pages that was purged on Facebook. Telesaur is also on Mind. There are already quite a lot of people that had a large following on Facebook, but there's quite a good basket of radical media on Mind already. So we just need to keep it growing, and we need to keep reposting each other and spreading the word.
So just to reiterate, the three selling points that you feel Minds has to offer, Minds.com has to offer, is no censorship, it's a decentralized platform, and there's no surveillance. My question to you would be, this shift from Facebook and Twitter to Minds.com, isn't that going to result in a drastic loss of viewership for anybody that actively quits their Facebook and Twitter and goes all in on Minds.com?
Yeah, it very well could. And that's why I think it's important, again, to note that we're not asking that people quit Facebook. That's totally up to the individual or the organization. I know that, you know, I personally have built bands and a show on Facebook, but I'm not getting the reach that I used to. Do I still post on Facebook? Absolutely. Will I? Probably. But I'm going to start much more online in order to build that platform as opposed to trying to get through this wall of censorship on Facebook. But everybody's experience and everybody's reasons for continuing to use Facebook or not will be different. If you want to keep Facebook and Twitter and all of that, take an extra 10 minutes a day and add Mind to your social media list and start getting comfortable with it, because it is a better platform.
It also looks like Minds.com is different than Facebook and Twitter in the sense that it does some form of profit sharing using cryptocurrency tokens, which is an idea that we keep seeing come back up and up with all these emerging platforms that are trying to disrupt Facebook and Twitter. Can you tell us a little bit about how that program has been working for you, whether you've been able to sustain yourself or find any kind of income through Minds.com?
So far, I've been using the tokens primarily on an internal basis, using them to boost posts, which is kind of the same idea as using, you know, your $1 to boost posts on Facebook. It's just you're using the crypto to boost posts online. I've been primarily using it in that sense, so I can't really see using it to put money into my own Coinbase account or anything like that. But I do know that there are folks out there that have.
We're going to be speaking with Bill Ottman in the next segment of the program, so we'll probably be asking him a whole host of technical questions and so forth about it. But it's certainly good to hear from your perspective as a journalist, as an activist, because the problems that we were outlining, that you were sharing at the beginning of the program that we're revisiting on social media censorship, they're growing and getting worse. And so it's interesting that out of the media summit that you attended with us, I had multiple conversations with people at different times about exactly this issue, not just the censorship issue, but where else can we go? Where else is being built? You know, Mark Crispin Miller was ready to go from NYU. A journalist, Peter B. Collins, and I had talked about it over a year ago. David Talbot from Salon fame years ago, we were talking about this. So I think you hit it right when you said the time is now. And this is something that we really need to do. So, Eleanor Goldfield, last minute here we have with you, last minute or two. Anything else you'd like to share with our listeners about some of the things that you have been dealing with and covering that maybe you aren't seeing a lot of on social media or in the corporate media?
We have been covering issues such as police being a public health issue. Police brutality has recently been either named as a public health issue by the APHA, and that's a big step forward. Extinction Rebellion and the work that they're doing out of England, but also across the world in terms of addressing climate change and literally the sixth extinction that is threatening humans and much other life on this planet. The forgotten war, quote unquote, the conflict in Yemen, including the Senate kind of backboneless vote to withdraw U.S. support to genocide in Yemen, the migrant caravan, as well as distance go up against big corporations across the country. And just one more, the Pentagon hitting home, the Pentagon's new powers to address quote-unquote insurrection inside the domestic United States. Those are some of the things that I've been covering.
These are all very significant issues, certainly ones that aren't in the corporate press and ones that we over here at Project Censored have in our books and online at projectcensored.org. So Eleanor Goldfield, artkillingapathy.com, thank you so much for taking time out and joining us today and for all of your work. Thanks also for turning us on to the mind shift that is taking place in terms of social media. Wanted to just conclude very briefly this segment. You brought up Edward Snowden earlier in a couple of very germane quips. When talking about Facebook, Snowden said, quote, "They make their money by exploiting and selling intimate details about the private lives of millions far beyond the scant details you voluntarily post. They are not victims. They are accomplices." And then later he went on to say, businesses that make money by collecting and selling detailed records of private lives were once plainly described as surveillance companies. Their rebranding as social media is the most successful deception since the Department of War became the Department of Defense. That was Edward Snowden. So thank you for reminding us of Snowden's observations earlier this year. Eleanor, thanks for joining us on the program.
Thank you so much for having me.
Up next on the program, we're going to talk about Minds.com with founder and CEO Bill Ottman. Stay with us.
I'm just an average man with an average life. I work from 9 to 5. Hey, hell, I pay the price. All I want is to be left alone in my average home. But why do I always feel like I'm in the twilight zone? And I always feel like
Welcome back to the Project Censored Show. I'm your host, Mickey Huff, in studio with Chase Palmieri. And here is Chase to introduce our next guest. Chase?
We're going to be talking to Bill Ottman. He's the co-creator and CEO of Minds.com. As you know from the previous segment with Eleanor Goldfield, we're talking about the Minds shift, shifting away from social media platforms like Facebook and Twitter, which are known for their stance on censorship and a centralized platform and surveillance platforms, all of which Minds.com is trying to differentiate themselves from. So, Bill, thank you for joining us today.
Thanks for having me.
So let's start really simple. I mentioned a few ways that you differentiate Minds.com than the other social media platforms, and those were from Eleanor Goldfield's words herself. Could you please tell us briefly how you would explain why people should join your platform instead of the other platforms, or whether they should couple their use of Minds.com with a traditional Facebook and Twitter?
I think that supplementing your social media with an open source encrypted app is extremely important. The apps that we use, our use is what dictates the growth of the power structures. So I think a lot of times people will unconsciously just use browsers, use operating systems, use apps without really thinking about the impact that that has. So it's not about going cold turkey right away, but using Firefox or the Brave browser or Tor over Safari and Chrome and Internet Explorer, like these actions actually do cause mass distribution of power away from those centralized surveillance platforms. So, and you know, these platforms like Minds and like Brave or Firefox or like using Ubuntu or Debian instead of Mac OS or Windows, these actions, they have huge impact. I mean, when millions of people start shifting their use to more ethical platforms, that is what changes the internet.
The website is Minds.com. We're speaking with Bill Ottman. So what's the story behind how and why you did this? Share that story with our listeners, because, of course, here at Project Censored, we've been very critical, certainly of late, of social media censorship and deplatforming and the rest. And a lot of the folks that we work with and talk to in the world of independent journalism are looking for other places to go. So if you would, could you share the story of how this came about?
We have known forever that there was going to emerge, you know, an uncensored, open source, more transparent, privacy focused. All we have to do is look at the history of the internet to predict this. I mean, if you look at the rise of Wikipedia, an open source, community powered encyclopedia, if you look at the rise of the Linux, Tor, different privacy tools, PGP, encryption, these are all open source frameworks that have ultimately all started to somewhat dominate their market. And you see it's happening with Bitcoin. And cryptocurrency is growing so fast because it's open source, transparent, and secure. So we saw that, okay, this is probably going to happen in social networking. It's not just going to be us. There's some other good alternatives out there. But, you know, we're going to make a real stab at this because we see, you know, the algorithms on Facebook are getting worse. Your reach is going down. They're spying on you. There's all these scandals, new scandal every day. And so, yeah, for the past 7 years, we've been hard at work building a scalable infrastructure, and Minds feels very similar to other social apps. The main difference being that we have this whole reward structure and incentivization. So you have a wallet, and every day you earn tokens for your contributions, which is on the Ethereum blockchain, and you can use those tokens to get more views on your post as opposed to what other networks do by restricting your reach and surveilling you to target ads at you and basically censoring your voice. From the NSA leak to the algorithms, the demonetization and deplatforming, I mean, all of these have been glaring.
So, Bill Ottman, let's chat a little bit about that, and let's break it down for people that are less aware of the cryptocurrency world and Bitcoin and so forth. So how does one get tokens? How does one acquire tokens on Minds.com?
All you have to do is set up your wallet.
So the user, if I have an account, I pay money.
No, you don't have to pay. You just earn them. When people upvote your content or comment on you or share your stuff, or if you make referrals, and actually even just for being active, you will receive tokens every day. We created the Mind Token. We distribute them every day and the network grows, but there is a limited supply. And these tokens, one token will give you 1,000 newsfeed impressions extra on your content if you boost with it.
Which is like Facebook boosting.
Except you can earn it and you don't have to pay. You can also buy tokens, but this whole gamification and the earnability of the token for rewards, this whole ethos of contributionism, of meritocracy, we wanted to really embed that into our platform so that the people who are working the hardest and creating really great content are getting rewarded the most, as opposed to the other way around, which is happening on other social networks where literally major alternative media brands who spent decades on the platform and built up millions of followers, you know, just gone overnight.
Yeah, well, we've certainly seen that. And again, the reason I'm just trying to get you to clarify on some of that is we want to understand what makes this kind of a platform different than certainly the ad revenue generated of old media. Can people get on there and post false stories and boost false stories as far as propaganda goes? But as we saw with Facebook, that was certainly an issue. What's different about Minds.com?
On your newsfeed, on whether it's Facebook or Instagram or YouTube, wherever it is, the order of the posts that you're seeing is no longer really chronological. You are seeing an amalgamation of content based on what those networks deem worthy of your attention. So they're feeding you what they want you to see. It's sort of based on who you subscribe to, but I mean, on Facebook, there's thousands of variables involved in what you're seeing. We're committed to always showing 100% raw, pure, and chronological. There will be boosts that will show up every once in a while. You can turn them off if you want, but that helps the network grow. But this is the core issue with what's happening with sort of the soft form of censorship. In terms of disinformation, I think that social networks are essentially propaganda engine in a strange way. I mean, everyone's trying to share their information. And yes, there's false information going around. And so I'm not going to naively say that no false information can get whizzing around the network. But I think that the approach that Facebook and others are taking to solving it is backwards. They're bringing in these think tanks to sort of vet what information is true and what is not. It's more about the individual user educating themselves about how to process information and how to do research, as opposed to determining through some sort of AI that certain keywords should get triggered and therefore punished and shadow banned. That's what's going on Google and Facebook. This information is not illegal. It can be dangerous, certainly. We have the rating systems just through the upvotes and downvotes. I think that is an important indicator. And then, you know, within the structure of the post itself, within the comments, I think we're about to bring in ranked comments so that best responses rise to the top. We're open to evolving the software in the way that best solves these problems. So I'm not even claiming to have all solutions for disinformation. But the point is that we're an open platform that's listening to the community, and we want to find the best solutions in a transparent way, as opposed to with these other networks, you just don't even know what is going on under the hood.
Right. And a big part of transforming your software over time or making sure that you're properly aligned with the community of users on your platform has to do with what your revenue model is. So I'd like it if we could just touch on that a little bit. I know we have tokens on the platform that people can use to either buy or earn and then boost their posts, which means I'm sure that the tokens go back to Minds.com. Now, is that the primary revenue model that you then get those tokens back that you could then cash out? And is the idea that these tokens will continue to go up in value over time? Can you just speak to the revenue model a little bit?
There's a few main components of the revenue model. So we sell the tokens, and tokens can basically redeem a variety of services on the platform. From, yes, advertising is one component, but I think that it's really important to understand that advertising in itself is a neutral force. is that promotion can be negative or positive. The issue with the advertising happening on the big tech platforms is the surveillance requirement of the advertising. So basically, there's no way to opt out of surveillance on the major proprietary social network. They target ads at you based on following you around, and that is the issue. But if there's consent-based advertising where a user opts into certain categories and, you know, they want to receive certain content, then I think that that's perfectly acceptable. And as long as you have the ability to opt out, I really don't think that advertising in itself is a positive or negative thing. It can be extremely useful. I mean, we're finding independent artists, journalists, filmmakers using our reward system to get eyeballs on their content, which they never would have been able to get on other networks. Even though we're a fraction of the size of the big network, they're getting more reach with us than with the big network.
We're speaking with Bill Ottman, the founder and CEO of Minds.com, also has a campaign underway, hashtag MindShift, for people to possibly check out different or alternative platforms because of a lot of the issues that have been taking place with censorship on social media, particularly Facebook, Twitter, but others as well. You were just mentioning advertising, and advertising is a neutral thing. It could be good. It could be bad. And of course, we'll get into this later. I wanted to talk to you about the Bill of Rights and the Electronic Frontier Foundation that do great work. Really important there to be aware of our civil rights in cyberspace. But as far as advertising goes, you know, if you go back to the 1980s, Noam Chomsky and Edward Herman wrote that classic book, Manufacturing Consent, on the political economy of the mass media, and they specifically singled out five major issues that influence what we call the corporate media and the corporate press. And advertising and ownership were the first two significant factors that could influence what would or wouldn't be covered or what would or wouldn't be deemed acceptable. So how is it at Minds.com that you're going to be able to mitigate any kind of influence of advertisers in that political capacity for content?
It would be disingenuous to say that an advertiser cannot have influence. But what we do want to do is, first of all, problem solve as a community. We're not going to allow advertising to ever drown out earned. And then in addition, I think in terms of the moderation of approved ads, I think that there's some creative work we could do there to maybe potentially have the community involved in the vetting process. But it's extremely complex. And I think that as long as the user is receiving the types of content that they want and that there's good feedback tools for them to say, you know, I don't want this, or for just to opt out entirely. I like receiving boosts, even though it's an amalgamation of different content. And it's sort of an echo chamber breaker. It ads, quote unquote, on mine don't really feel like ads. It feels like a feed of content. You're getting artists, you're getting videos, you're getting articles. It feels a little bit different. So I understand the potential danger, and I think that it's something that we need to look at. But we also need to realize that it is a powerful force to be able to give creators a voice and give people more impressions. And that literally, that's what we're doing. We're giving away newsfeed impressions every day. So you can call it advertising. You can label it a number of different things. And I hear you on the danger, but I also hear the danger of restricted reach on the other network. So it's sort of like you have to pick one battle at a time.
Right. I'd like to remind listeners that you're tuned to the Project Censored Show. I'm Mickey Huff in studio with Chase Palmieri. We're speaking with CEO and founder of Minds.com, Minds.com, as an alternative to Facebook and Twitter. Speaking with Bill Ottman, the CEO and founder, and we're going to continue that conversation after this musical break. Stay with us. We'll be right back. Welcome back to the Project Censored Show. I'm your host, Mickey Huff, in studio with co-host Chase Palmieri. We're speaking with CEO and founder of Minds.com, Bill Ottman. If you want to learn more, go to Minds.com and you can follow along the website and look there. So, Bill Ottman, before the break, we were unpacking some of the challenges, of course, of media and journalism in getting a platform and megaphone for larger audiences, but also ways to monetize, ways for people to make money. And of course, the issue of advertising came up. We talked about the many challenges with that. Let's move off from advertising momentarily. And I know Chase is going to want to jump in here in a minute, but I also want to unpack a little bit the so-called Bill of Rights on the platform. But before that, Chase, you wanted to ask Bill something.
Yeah, I had a quick question. Earlier in the program, Bill, you mentioned that the platform is open source. And so just for our listeners, I wanted to let them know that basically what that means, the act of making your software open source, means that anybody can create their own version of Minds.com. And that is kind of a classic callback, mission-driven company move that you could relate to a Tesla making their patents open source, which is really a way of indicating to the public that you're here with the intention of driving forward this mission or this concept more than you are about personally being the winner or a monopolistic player in the platform. To follow up on that, I'm very curious because Facebook has a history of buying up or acquiring any type of social media platform that gets big enough to even start to threaten their traffic. And so I'm curious, Bill, if you've thought or if the company or yourself has taken a stance on whether or not you would outright reject any offer of acquisition from Facebook if in the next 5 years Minds.com gets so big that they come to you with $1 billion, or if that is something that you've possibly considered doing as a way of becoming the decentralized version of Facebook and getting to tap into their shared resources.
Facebook would have no reason to buy us because they have what we have. They have similar tech. They have so much vested interest in the surveillance model and in the proprietary software model, closed source software, that the best thing, in my opinion, that they could do is go open source. Stop censoring legal content. That's it. That's pretty much the formula. If they do that, then they suddenly have transparency with their community. They are no longer needlessly censoring. Okay, yeah, maybe there would be some blowback from a couple of advertisers, but for the vast majority, it's going to have hugely positive benefits. It'll be a great contribution to the technological state of the world. You'll have all sorts of developers building on your product. That's their out, but they seem to be just going down further down this rabbit hole of censorship and secrecy. So I don't think that they would really even want to. Their model, the revenue model, is so dependent on surveillance that I don't think that they could.
Bill Ottman, in the segment with Eleanor Goldfield prior to your coming on, she had mentioned Ed Snowden, and of course we found a couple of the choice observations from Snowden about those platforms, and basically was really emphasizing the surveillance element of all of this. And so that brings me back to Minds.com. And folks that want to go and look at that site, Minds.com, if you scroll down on the left column there, you can find a Bill of Rights. And it says Minds is officially adopting the Manila Principles on Intermediary Liability, a digital bill of rights outlined by the Electronic Frontier Foundation and other leading digital rights organizations. And of course, that's something that caught my eye right away because we're big fans with EFF here in San Francisco, and we think they do extremely important work. Could you connect some of those principles and those ideas for our listeners?
So the Manila Principles are pretty brilliant. Basically, whether it's a domain registrar or an ISP or a social network, basically laying out that the platform doesn't need to be liable for the content on the site as long as it's legal. So what we see in mainstream social media right now is the outrageous content policies. And it's really just not necessary. I mean, it feels to me like they're causing more problems for themselves than they're solving. But what we're basically saying is that as long as it's lawful in the U.S., it can be on the platform. There's good legal precedent to support that. And there's also a practical reason for people's digital rights. Why do we want to subjectively be making determinations about what is and what is not acceptable?
This also connects to the Bill of Rights on the Mines page, the Manila Principles. It also talks here, the framework, I'm quoting this, it says, our objective is to encourage the development of interoperable and harmonized liability regimes that can promote innovation while respecting users' rights in line with the Universal Declaration of Human Rights, among other things, and includes also the International Covenant on Civil and Political Rights and the UN Guiding Principles on Business and Human Rights. And the UN Declaration of Human Rights just celebrated its 70th anniversary. And of course, one of the more important elements, I find at least, regarding the UN Declaration of Human Rights is its connection to media freedom. And that's more specifically in something called Article 19. And Article 19 is the part that very specifically protects the rights of individuals not only to speak and to express themselves, but also the right of people then to listen and the right to be heard. So that does sound like a pretty significant overlapping principle with Minds.com. Would you agree, Bill Ottman?
Oh, for sure. There's no question that there's plenty of despicable speech out there, but that's really not the point. I think that what we've observed with the American experiment, the First Amendment, that actually free speech creates healthier society. And there's also dozens of studies and peer-reviewed papers that talk about the side effects of censorship and how censorship further amplify violence, extremism, polarization. So the strategy that mainstream networks are taking right now is very short-term, very short-sighted, causing the internet to become more hostile. What we really need to do as sort of a federation of platforms is be following documents like the Manila Principles so that we're all basically on the same page. Because when they censor, you have all of these upset users flocking to other networks, getting more upset because they're unable to express themselves. I'm a broken record with bringing up Daryl Davis, but he's a African-American man who befriended hundreds of members of the KKK. Got them all to leave the KKK just through open discourse. It seems like physics. It's a strategy for discourse. And shutting down conversation just doesn't work. And so all these U.S.-based companies, I don't understand why they're falling into the trap.
Well, they're modeling a lot of the traditional media that because of ownership and advertising and flack and ideology and reliance on official sources on the propaganda model, their content is susceptible to being influenced and molded by powerful players. I'd like to remind listeners that you are listening to the Project Censored Show. I'm Mickey Huff with Chase Palmieri. We'll continue our conversation after this musical break. Welcome back to the Project Censored Show. I'm your host, Mickey Huff, in studio with Chase Palmieri. I think that one of the things that Minds.com, as a central focus, and as I'm learning more about it, really needs to follow in line with Article 19 and really needs to follow ideas like those espoused by the Electronic Frontier Foundation. I mean, that's what makes it a viable and attractive place, certainly for people that care about things like Article 19, which, by the way, I'll read. Everyone has the right to freedom of opinion and expression. This right includes freedom to hold opinions without interference and to seek, receive, and impart information and ideas through any media and regardless of frontiers. That's a pretty important statement, and it does sound, Bill Ottman, like that's something that certainly wasn't lost on you.
It's a primary principle. There's a gravity toward more information, towards more conversation. So as long as major social networks are censoring, that conversation is going to be had elsewhere. As long as you have good reporting tools for actually harmful illegal content, good blocking tools, good muting tools, good filtering tools, so you can control your experience. The full spectrum of content deserves to be there, and hiding it is not going to help. I think this is what we see with trends throughout history of prohibition and what actually works to solve social problems. And I think that through data analysis, forensics, and looking at analytics, we can start to actually empirically track how censorship doesn't work and how free speech actually can solve more problems.
So, Bill Ottman, I want to get a little bit practical here because we all know that Facebook and Twitter are hugely entrenched players with thousands of developers, infinite resources, and already most of the world on these platforms, huge network effects already. And as I'm sure you know, as a tech platform creator, the more visibility that you can get for the content on your platform, the more content creators that will actually come and produce content that creates the flywheel, that creates the network effects that Twitter and Facebook already have. So I'm wondering, very practically, what are the next steps for Minds.com? What do you guys need to get right over the next 2 years to maybe take a bite out of some of that traffic or to ultimately win and overthrow these platforms completely?
A lot of it has to do with the key influencers who support these ideas. So it's highly underestimated how victims the big networks are to their major creators, especially the ones who support free speech. So certainly going after those people to bring them over, and that is a very important way to initiate network effects. Additionally, one of the cruxes of our situation, because we respect people's privacy, we're not just going to reach into your contacts and bulk import and destroy everyone's privacy. This is one of the dirty tricks that all the big networks did to grow super fast. They not only got you to betray your own privacy, but they got you to actually betray your own contacts' privacy.
What you're referring to is the uploading of address books that was first created by LinkedIn as their growth strategy.
Correct. This worked, but the thing is, you're then handing over your friend's personal information to a big tech giant. So it definitely makes it harder for us, because when you respect people's privacy, there's a lot more voluntary decision-making that's involved with growth. But I still think that we can achieve it with a combination of building a serious beast of a platform and app that is fully competitive functionally. We are moving fast, and within the next 6 months, we're hiring a lot right now, very talented, brilliant developers. So I think it's a combination of the influencers, incentivization with the tokens. I think that that is a very important way to initiate mass viral kind of movements, and then also with just building a truly competitive application, which even though we have not nearly as many developers, I think that with the power of the open source community, lots of developers all over the world helping, and you know, we do have funding of our own somehow. The community has come through with us. For us, last year we did an equity crowdfunding raise over $1 million from 1,500 members of our community. So they all have stock, and we also just raised capital with the blockchain focus company, but we've already unleashed the power of our platform to the world anyway. So if for some unforeseen freak accident, you know, something happened, we put all of our code out there for anyone to take and replicate.
That's really great. I do want to touch on one last advantage, and it's kind of a two-sided sword that might eventually fall back down on Facebook and Twitter, which is, like you said, these are surveillance companies. They are scouring over all of the data and content that you're touching in your feed and the relationships you have to other people and the content that they're touching and how they're likely you are to engage with an advertisement or not. And these platforms literally have teams of psychologists and scientists who are working on the exact right amount of dopamine hits per minute to keep you on the platform and to keep you coming back. And since your platform is not going to be scouring over the information in this way, I wonder how you would speak to the advantage that they have just on a pure dopamine hit level, that their feed of content is proven to be the most engaging that they could possibly make it, and that you're not going to be taking that action.
I would say that we are looking at analytics. We are looking at public information on the network, and we are actually hiring a data scientist. But it's the context with which this kind of research is happening. as long as it's happening in an open and transparent way with the community and on public, not personal information that's surveilled unethically, then I think that we can still pursue those studies openly with the community. And the thing with the odd phenomenon with the Facebook feed is, so yes, they know that they can increase dopamine, but they also are intentionally causing depression because they know that the more likes you get, the more happy. And they know that they're taking away your likes now because they're taking away your reach and your feed. You're only reaching, like I said, 5% of your own followers. So they've diminished that intentionally. They're creating depression. It's a drug addiction. They're giving you little bits of satisfaction, little random posts. They'll randomly give you some engagement, keep you coming back. So I think with our incentive model, with the token model and reward system, you know, that is actually dopamine. We haven't been studying it, but I think that if someone did study it, they probably would see that there's a connection between dopamine and our token system. Now, I'm super freaked out by the social media addiction issue. I used to be very anti-social media before we started all this, but because I saw the psychological impact it was having on us all. I mean, we all have issues with our phones. It's getting really bad. So I am focused very much on the real world, live events. I think we're going to be moving towards integrating that with the app and also bringing in features that stop you from using minds and try to educate people on how to stay balanced, because it's really dangerous to just be on your phone all day. So we need to figure out a way to do all of this kind of research in an open way that isn't manipulating users intentionally and feed more of a healthy lifestyle and at the same time.
So, Bill Ottman, you also have apps for people they could download, as we were just talking about not using our phones as much.
It's very nuanced. I think that we have to support technology that supports digital rights. So there's no harm in having apps, using apps. We're all going to do it no matter what. This is the communication vehicle of the 21st century. It's okay. But we also just have to remember that we're on planet Earth. You know, it has inverse psychological effects. When a company is actively telling you not to use your phone.
Bill Ottman, I'll be the old guy shaking his fist on the front porch, telling the young whippersnapper techno to please leave my lawn, drop their phones, and look somebody in the face and have a conversation. But I say that too, only partially in jest, because this is a really important subject and topic. You're correct. The technology is here. Billions of people are using it and are being subjected to it and surveilled. And so it's really important that we take a look at serious alternatives, not only understanding the problem and looking at the stories that don't get reported, which Eleanor Goldfield was helping us learn about and talk to us about, but also Bill Ottman, you, CEO and founder of Minds.com. You're swimming in that technological sea, right? And you're basically trying to find out, it's here, we need to try to make sure that it's more democratic, that it's more transparent, and that it's more accessible and not used as a tool for control, propaganda, or censorship.
Yeah, that's it. I mean, it exists, and the internet, if we don't make this happen, if we don't have an open platform rise to the top, or at least be in the conversation as one of the leading competitors, we have a real problem. And this goes along with the rise of AI and literal existential risk that we as humanity have with the rise of these technologies. So you mentioned Tesla before. Elon Musk, he is also a big proponent of the organization OpenAI, which advocates for open source development of artificial intelligence, because if the public doesn't have access to peer review these technologies, there's no escaping these technologies. It's not just a matter of some inventor from the 1900s having the right to a patent on his new invention. Like, these technologies affect people who don't even want to be interacting with them.
Well, that's a very good point, and one that we're going to have to end on, Bill Ottman, because we're out of time for this segment. But I wanted to thank you for the work you're doing and sharing with our audience that alternatives to Facebook and Twitter are here. And, of course, if our listeners are interested, they could go to Minds.com and learn more if they like. So, Bill Ottman, thanks so much for joining us on the Project Censored Show today.
Clear. We ain't scared. This is the bit.
You've been listening to the Project Censored Show, established in 2010 by Mickey Huff and Peter Phillips. Mickey Huff is executive producer and host of the program, with myself, co-host Chase Palmieri. Anthony Fest is our senior producer, and Dennis Murphy is our associate producer. The Project Censored Show airs on over 40 stations around the United States, from Maui to New York. To learn more about our work, or to find any of our previous archived programs, go to projectcensored.org. Please follow and like us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram, and be sure to subscribe to the official Project Censored Show on your cell phone's podcast app. Feel free to share your feedback about our work, and last but not least, thanks to you, our listeners, for tuning in. We'll see you next time.
About criminal minds, political ties, habitualized alibis, disguise, another guy's democracy, politics, and the apocalypse. Got the skies looking ominous. So the ocean burned bright with waves full of poison. Genocide, wars, fall for little boys, and the weapons manufactured paid for by taxing while the bridges and the levees and the mines collapsing. All the prisons, build the capacity, citizens, and the times for the master thief.